extremely sensitive as workers to the precarious state of the public finances, of how some SOEs on the verge of collapse and the danger that poses to workers' jobs and pensions, the economy, etc. But we feel, Chair, that it really is a painful blow to workers who are already struggling to make ends meet. Workers are facing a multiplicity of economic crises. We don't think government has gone sufficiently far enough to present alternative economic measures to help the poor. And again, Chair, without repeating old songs, we don't feel government has got a sufficient grasp yet on the crisis of corruption and wasteful expenditure across the board. There are good initial moves by the President, by SARS, etc., but we think much, much more needs to be done. Chair, we note the panel's discussions around the VAT. We retain our stance that VAT is by its nature aggressive. You might get more VAT from the rich because they have more money, but the poor have less money to share, and whatever few cents they have, if you take it away, it's much more painful. We think the hike has actually worsened inequality levels, and this comes on the baggage of what we feel are anti-poor, anti-worker tax hikes. VAT, fuel, RAF, the income tax bracket adjustments below inflation, your ESCOM, your water hikes, etc., which are far and above inflation. Chair, as COSATU, our affiliates, again, our backs are to the wall. There are continuous rumors, plans by departments and SOEs to reduce their headcount. Some SOEs want to engage in retrenchments. We saw the article about 30,000 workers to be cut in the public service and some denials. Chair, again, in this backbone, we have 72,000 mine workers lost their job in the past 2 years, retrenchments across all sectors of the economy. At the same time, Chair, we don't feel government has come with a meaningful job creation economic stimulus program yet. And we don't feel that there's been any new taxes upon the rich. It's simply let the poor pay the cost for state capture. Chair, in terms of the VAT panel's report, I think we appreciate the work they've done. We think they've provided comprehensive, useful reports. We welcome their 6 proposed additional zero-rated VAT items, your white bread, your flour. We specifically also appreciate not only they suggesting that sanitary pads be included, but the government also looks at purchasing or funding those sanitary pads. We are calling upon government simply to implement that report as is. We don't want to see government complain about costs and delay and et cetera, et cetera. Chair, we are disappointed that the VAT panel didn't recommend the inclusion of locally produced poultry products. We're emphasizing specifically locally produced. We're also disappointed that they didn't include our recommendation to them, which we made in writing and in person when we met with them, about having a progressive sliding scale VAT regime for water and electricity. We thought that could have been a very useful way of putting cash into the pockets of the poor and ensuring that the poor receive it, not retailers. Chair, in terms of a few proposals from our side, for immediate proposals, well, obviously as COSATU, we would love to see the VAT hike rescinded, or at the very least, a clear time frame limitation to it, 1 year or 2 years. But a permanent time frame, Chair, we think it's a bit unfair. Chair, we would want to see a much clearer action from government, a program. How are they going to recover all the billions that have been stolen from the state? How are they going to reduce wasteful expenditure? We have seen, I think, about R1 billion being returned to ESCOM, which is a positive first step. But given the daily horror stories we hear at all the commissions, the media, we really want to see government arresting people recovering stolen assets before we squeeze money out of the workers. Chair, additional items we would propose for inclusion on the VAT recommendations. So one is the locally produced poultry products. Chair, we think if you make it locally produced, it can help protect the local industry, which has been battling a flood of cheap subsidized imports from the US, from Brazil, and so on. Poultry is a key food item for the poor. It's good for the poor, dietary-wise. Chair, we'd also want to say, in terms of sanitary pads, 2 things. One, let them be zero-rated. But 2, let government also simply purchase sanitary pads and distribute them at your no-fee schools, government clinics, government hospitals, etc. We've done it with the feeding scheme. We've done it with condoms. We don't think that women or girls should be disadvantaged from going to school, to work, to university because of a normal cycle of life. And of course, those sanitary pads must be locally produced, again, to protect, boost local industry. Chair, we'd also want to see, and we saw the panel made a good initial recommendation, a about including school uniforms. We think that governments should simply provide school supplies for free at your low-fee schools, be it school uniforms, stationery, textbooks. Again, we think you can do that. If you procure it through Treasury, through the Chief Procurement Officer, we think you can save money, etc. And again, of course, locally produced, obviously, not made in China. Chair, our last recommendation on the panel. We think there is sufficient space around the water and electricity tariffs to play around with. It's a bit strange to charge VAT for water, an essential human right, the right for life. We think, Chair, there are some municipalities which have gone a bit further. You could zero it in on the poor by saying if your household, for example, is worth less than 400,000 rand. Or if you're a social grant recipient, unemployed, indigent, you could qualify. And you could have a sliding scale that maybe the first essential allocation of water and electricity is VAT exempt. The second allocation could be at the normal VAT rate. And then your excessive consumption by the rich, etc., could be at a luxury VAT rate. We think there are space and precedents already at a municipal level, for example, in the city of Cape Town, I think Johannesburg, where there are that kind of targeted approaches. And that way you can be sure that the money is going to the poor, it's not going to the retailer who's just pocketing the difference and not changing the prices, Chair. Lastly, Chair, our longer-term proposals is one, we think we need to do serious research about essential medicines. We don't think we should be having a VAT for essential medicines when people are purchasing it simply to ensure they can live longer. You can say locally produced, find that it also assists the local pharmaceutical industry. We think there should be a commitment around a time limit for the VAT increase. We should seriously investigate a luxury VAT rate for luxury goods. Chair, we think government treasury needs to look harder about overhauling the entire tax regime to make sure the poor are protected more, the rich pay their fair and higher share, and specifically at company, inheritance, and estate taxes. And then lastly, Chair, we really want to see government at all levels, not just the president and some ministers, really being champions of stamping out corruption, recovering our stolen money, reducing wasteful expenditure, because you don't know whether to laugh or to cry every Sunday when you read the Sunday papers, where the media does fantastic work to expose the shenanigans, but we don't see equal effort by government to correct those mistakes. And we can increase taxes all we want, but if we don't address the wasteful expenditure, we're not going to get come right on this, Chair. So that's our presentation in a nutshell, Chair. I know you're under time pressure, so I try to keep it short and succinct. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, we'll take all of you, because there's a lot of overlap between what you're saying now and what you said before and what you will, in fact, say. So we'll take all discussion after you've spoken. Sama, where are you? Please go ahead. Before you do, just a quick thing. Is the panel here? Where are you? Oh, yeah. I'm not sure what the protocol is. The Treasury might guide us. But whether a panel will respond today, who's in charge of Treasury today? I see your commissar is not here. Younger. Okay. But in the meanwhile, who is? Somebody has to be. Yeah, you just check what the protocol is. Whether a panel responds, well, that's not their job. They deal only with Treasury. I don't know. But at some stage, if not now, we should be given some space, I think. All right, fine. We have to go ahead. Life carries on without Momo. It carries on without me.
Oh, yeah.
Tandy will show you in a moment. Right, so where are we? Yeah, over to you. Right. Those of you who are new, just introduce yourselves and in 30 seconds tell us a bit about your organization. Sorry?
Lilo Mamecha. I'm from South African Medical Association. We unify doctors for the health of the nation. And today we are really here for the health of the nation. And this project on VAT falls under our project named Social Determinants of Health. Like decisions that are made elsewhere, the casualties literally end up in health sector. And we've submitted our written submission, and we've done the presentation here before. However, we are concerned that the panel didn't take it into consideration in the draft report. And we had a slight different approach because we were suggesting alternatives to raise fiscus, because we do believe that raising the fiscus deficit from the population, the voiceless population, the most vulnerable population, may not be the right first approach. Yes, we may need to go into it at some point, but we can't start with them. And we are realizing that we do need to raise the fiscus because we need to finance the national health insurance. And we did raise in our submission that we are acceptable means to raise fiscus to allow the health, the nation to get health. And as I'm talking today, we haven't really felt the big impact of the Fed in the health sector, because a decision was made that the medical scheme mustn't shift the Fed to the membership. They must absorb that from their surpluses. However, the medication right now, if you go to the pharmacist, is progressively becoming expensive. And an ordinary South African who sometimes gets supplied in the clinic, when they don't have medication, they go and buy from the pharmacist, are being affected. But most importantly, when you raise the tax and people need the money for food, and we find that people just don't come for their clinic visits because they don't have enough money to come for their clinic visits. And when you don't come for clinic visits, they complicate, and who bears the cost of medical complication is the state. So that is really, really regressive. And in our submission, we also made, we requested that things like electricity be looked into, because those are huge expenses. We realized they haven't been looked into. So we, in view of that, maybe we can consider canned legumes, because then the people don't have to cook those. They can just have access to them. And we do appreciate the fact that nappies will be exempt. That will relieve some households. The sanitary towels, it will improve more access than give financial relief, so it's a comfort issue. And we do appreciate the fact that formula was not considered. We still consider breastfeeding as the first model of feeding. And maybe our submission today is we need our report to be considered. The alternative syntaxes, we feel that can may be appropriate, and VAT at this moment is going to have a huge impact on the society, not only the poor, but access to medical care will just be detrimentally affected. Thank you.
At the level of ideal value principle, who could argue with that? Yes, I'd be interested to know. At the level of, you know, trade-offs and, you know, being practical about where we are, if we might not entirely agree, but I can't see any member of any party agree broadly what you say. But we'll come back to you.
Chairperson, thank you so much. My name is Lionel Ardendorf, and I'm a Fair Play activist. Fair Play is a not-for-profit organization started to fight predatory trade practices, in particularly the chicken and the poultry, the sugar and the poultry industries. We are for the protection of jobs. We are for the development and of the economy. We are for the development of rural communities that depend on it, and we are also fighting for livelihoods. I am accompanied by my colleague Ashok Adhikari behind me, and we have a few slides, and I hope that I'll do this with him.
How many structures affiliated to you, how many individuals are part of this structure?
We have a group of volunteers of around probably 40 across South Africa. But also we also rely on our colleagues who have suffered similar experiences or had similar experiences in Ghana, in Cameroon, and in other countries that we also count on regularly for insight and for experiences. So now that we're on, Tefe is of the firm view that the inclusion of chicken is in the best interest of the poor, because lower income households benefit the most. It's the most nutritional option, and it, as a result, it combats malnutrition. We talk about fair evaluation of chicken would then prove that chicken is indeed the best option, and the benefits of it outweigh the cost. We, as I said, we are of the view that chicken is a staple of lower income households, as proven by research and also the WHOLA panel of experts. It's the largest staple protein for lower income households. It's not a luxury, but a necessity in the diet. More zero-rated food items are purchased by the lower income households, and nearly half of their food spending goes on VAT-free items. Chicken is South Africa's most popular source of meat protein, and the consumption has doubled since the year 2000. More is spent on chicken than on mealie-meal, brown bread, rice, or beef by poorer households. South African consumers are under pressure, and that we understand, and the poor are the hardest hit. And unfortunately, or fortunately, the poor depends on chicken as the highest protein-rich household item. Targeting food items help reduce the regressive effect of that on the poor. It's the most nutritious option, as we said, because policy measures that increase protein intake, especially by the young and the elderly, can both increase national productivity and improve our national health status. Malnutrition, which can result in both stunting and obesity, is a serious problem in South Africa, as legislators and MPs would know. Stats SA reported recently that about a third of all children in Gauteng and the Free State are stunted as a result of chronic malnutrition. Research published recently in the International Journal of Epidemiology shows that South African children are fast becoming the world leaders in obesity as a result of poor nutrition. Malnutrition, as we said, is a national priority and a concern. Poverty is on the rise in South Africa, and the poor are hardest hit by the increase in VAT. Adding nutrient-rich foods such as chicken to the VAT-free basket would bring welcome relief. 1.58 million South Africans under 5 are stunted due to malnutrition, and 30.4 million South Africans are living in poverty. There again, we have a slide that includes the impact of malnutrition on children and on the country as a whole, and also on the economy. Child mortality, for instance, stunted children are 4 times more likely to die than children who are not. IQ scores are also much lower, and adults who are stunted earn 22% less. That's according to research that we found, and then also the impact on the economy chair. The benefits, as we said, outweigh the cost, and South Africa can afford it. And it is up to you as legislators to make this decision, and we do think that it is the right decision. And this platform here, Chair, is indeed the best platform to where the poor's most immediate concerns can be addressed. Chicken has the best cost-to-benefit ratio. The cost of the fiscus is recoverable and could result in more than 10,000 new jobs and 1 billion rand in tax revenue, and then also around 3.7 billion to the GDP. The economic benefits are widely distributed. Reviewing the current basket of zero-rated items will produce savings. And we can afford VAT-free chicken by fighting corruption and illicit trade that evades revenue collection. That is our story on that. We do have some views on the panel's report, Chair, but I'm not sure whether we can continue with that based on your concern that you raised earlier.
That's exactly what we want you to do. Focus on the panel report, because there are things that you say to Treasury they may not take into account, but they don't make the decision we do.
Thanks so much.
So can members please be aware we're making submissions? The primary focus, not to repeat what you said, or the generalities that have persisted for far too long. Now we must be clear. What do you think of the panel's report? By the way, Professor, I don't know why you're hiding there. There's no law or rule that says you can't sit next to Chandi. Although Chandi will distract you all the time. But please come and sit here or sit to here next to, there's a seat next to Lionel.
Thank you so much, Chair. We, as I said the last time, our biggest criticism of the panel's report is that there was no review of the current zero-rated list. And we are of the opinion that if there was a thorough review of the current zero-rated list, we might have come to a point where we would have taken some items off and then included new preferences of the lower-income households on the list. The list was left unaltered, and the changing dietary needs and consumer preferences over the last 27 years were totally disregarded. And this demonstrates that all significant aspects of the revised terms of reference were not adequately explored in the report. The recommended items are treated inconsistently in terms of how criteria
I'm not that smart. You know, Tandy is very slow. She's a new member. She's only been here for how many years? 19 years or
so. So, let me go slower. There are items recommended which are in industries that are more highly concentrated, where parties have been found guilty of price fixing, where the bulk of the sales are from imported produce, and where the benefits are less regressive. Chicken, we believe, has been discriminated against, if you look at it. The panel also was divided on chicken, and the arguments for chicken in the report weigh more heavily in favor of chicken, in fact, that's our view, and the inability to come to a conclusion leaves the decision, therefore, to you as members of Parliament. We also think that we have made a submission to Treasury, and we do believe that those processes are different, but it's running parallel, and we do respect both processes, and therefore view the VAT issue from a pro-quiz perspective as fair play. In the debate on which items should be zero-rated for VAT, fair play wants to achieve what is in the best interest of lower-income households. The exclusion of chicken is therefore, in our view, not. We have a campaign for VAT-free chicken because fair play believes the inclusion of chicken on the list of zero-rated food items is an essential intervention to address the plight of lower-income households that they find themselves in, and it will ensure that these vulnerable households have access to affordable, nutritious meals. We also think, Chair, that there were some serious time constraints that the Hulaat Commission had to deal with, and in those time constraints, we unfortunately think that quality was then the biggest casualty. As we said, the chairperson was appointed on the 29th. The terms of references were announced a month later on the 25th, and the panel was supposed to submit their report 2 months later on the 30th of June, and the call for submissions was published on the 10th of May. Only 2 weeks were given for the public to make these submissions. 2 days before the deadline for submissions, Chair, the Minister amended the terms of references of the panel and extended the public submissions deadline by a day and extended the deadline for submissions of the report by another month. As I said, there were those inconsistencies, and we are not going to repeat our long list of reasons why chicken should be included, but in our view, it is the best view. We also do think, Chair, that there were some definition issues that the Hulaat Commission identified as a problem.
I know you have 10 minutes, but round up, okay.
And we thought that they should have brought a solution, Chair. Our members and the public have our presentation,
yeah.
And we do think that they can peruse that.
Okay, thank you very much. AIGC.
Good morning, Chair. I think it has been mentioned to you by email that AIGC is part of the Budget Justice Coalition, so if you don't mind, I'll leave the mic to my colleague Paula, which is also part of the Budget Justice Coalition.
Okay. Are you here or you're not here?
Chairperson, we're here, but Neil Coleman is running late, so we'd just like to ask
if... We couldn't dare refuse, Neil. Yeah, you want to postpone it to later. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Too much problem.
And it's a combination of very highly intellectual people who can make a substantive interview.
Sorry?
Never mind.
Dandy, you'll soon be cheering and you'll be heckled by me. Right. Peter Maritzburg, Economic Justice and Dignity Group. Where are you? AXA formally. Yeah.
We are here.
Yeah, you have obviously half an hour.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have to...
Okay.
I mean, Maritzburg has a special place in the country in terms of this issue. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we want to say thank you for the opportunity to be able to speak to the committee today. The Peter Maritzburg Economic Justice and Dignity Group wishes to put on record that... Sorry, this thing is... I'd switched it off.
Ah, yeah, now we can hear you.
Yeah, just for a few minutes, if you want between. Thank you. On the 1st of April, Mr. Chair, despite massive resistance from many sectors of our society, the VAT increase was implemented. We just want to show the picture of really what the impact of a 15% VAT has been on the food basket that we track. The Economic Justice and Dignity Group tracks a basket of 38 foods, 18 of which are zero rated, and 20 are subjected to VAT. In August 2018, the total cost of the basket of 38 foods was 3,009 rand. Foods subjected to VAT make up 55% of the basket. And the foods that were VAT-able totaled 1,654 rand. The VAT on these foods totaled 215 rand, or 7.2% of the entire basket. The amount of VAT, therefore that 215 rand, equals, in fact, the price of a 35 kg of maize meal, which poor and working class households wish to buy each month. So the VAT on that basket is not insubstantial. If the recommendations of the panel are accepted in its current form, then the savings on the household food basket will be 40 rand and 81 cents per month in August. Mr. Chair, this is a saving, but we have to consider it in a wider context. That this saving of 40 rand and 81 cents would bring the total cost of the household food basket to 2,968 rand, which is almost equivalent to the median wage for a black South African worker, which is at 3,000 rand. And that is just food alone. And therein lies the problem. And so for us, it's not a question merely around zero rating. Really, the heart of the question is that we are not getting sufficient income coming into low-income households. Between June and August as well, Mr. Chair, the food inflation on zero-rated foods such as maize meal, rice and cooking oil was higher than food subjected to VAT. And what that will do, of course, as we said in our previous intervention, is that it would force low-income households to move away from zero-rated foods to foods that has VAT on it, because it's an affordability question. We must also remember that we are speaking, as the previous speaker has said, in a context in which low-income households are underspending on food by 26%, extreme high stunting levels, and we have to measure that high levels in terms of future economic productivity. We are on the pathway to low growth, to in fact institutionalize low growth if stunting continues in South Africa.
So the position of the Peter Maritzburg Justice and Dignity Group is that food should not be considered a commodity but a public good, because it is so important in terms of health and developmental outcomes and a critical input in economic productivity. But Mr. Chair, as you've said, let's deal with the panel's report. And so having given that as a background, we wish to say that we have sympathy for the panel, Mr. Chair, because it seems to us that both the scope and the time frame given to the panel was really insufficient to deal adequately with this complex and serious question. And so what we are seeing actually resulting from the panel's report is really a process of tinkering around the edges of the affordability crisis, and that is no reflection on the members of the panel. It is rather around the time frame and the scope. Given that the panel has reported, and if we have to go the zero-rated route, then we would offer the following comments. We support the starches which have been identified for zero rating. We would make an appeal that peanut butter be considered. And I don't represent any company that sells peanut butter. I don't grow peanuts either. I do like it though, yes. And I was brought up on it. But Mr. Chair, we are concerned that they are not, if we have to go the zero route and we look at the basket of zero-rated foods, that there are not sufficient proteins zero-rated. And that contributes from a nutritional point of view to the increase in standing, etc. So we would like to ask for that consideration. We strongly support, very strongly support the recommendation by the panel to re-look at increasing the child support grant and the social security. We say that the child support grant should at the very minimum at least allow mothers to be able to purchase food for their children. And our data shows that the food component alone should be costed around 530 and 699 rand a month to feed a child. So that brings us to a level of where that could be set. And we know that old age grants are used primarily in most households to purchase food. We also think that social security needs to be rethought as an economic stimulus in order to create economic activity. Our South African economy is starving of money at the grassroots level. They've got enough money to stimulate the economy. Can we get money into the grassroots areas to stimulate a consumer-led recovery at that level? And we believe that social grants can play such a role. We also support the Commission's idea around the creation of a permanent commission on poverty. This question is going to be with us for a long time yet, and we need to have people thinking about it. On the other hand, we want to warn Mr. Chair that it's become fashionable to appoint expert panels every time there is a crisis. So for instance, national minimum wage and now the VAT panel. We are asking that if this panel, and we support the creation of such a panel, but that it also has people on the panel that are connected to the grassroots and not only academics at university. In conclusion, Mr. Chair, we would like to say that tax policy, and that includes VAT, should focus on collecting tax from those who can afford it, and in a manner that is not going to be detrimental to the economy as a whole. And that we only tax that which we can control. And we are not convinced that the increase in VAT does that, and therefore we continue to be opposed to the VAT increase. And having seen that Treasury, that SARS might find it extremely difficult to raise the amount of tax it should be raising going forward, we would like to warn now already, or put on the agenda now already, that VAT not be considered again next time around. Because once it's implemented, it's almost impossible to retract. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Neil, are you ready or you want some space? Are you ready to go?
I think I'll go.
Okay. Right, now Budget Justice Coalition, did you say you're doing an input? Yeah.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present. I am here representing the Budget Justice Coalition. We are a coalition of civil society organizations, including AIDC, which is my colleague on my right, Erwin, the Children's Institute at University of Cape Town, the Institute for Economic Justice. My colleague, Neil Coleman, will be presenting a separate submission as well, the Equal Education Law Center, Public Service and Accountability Monitor, Rural Health Advocacy Project, SPI, and Section 27. So we represent quite a broad coalition of organizations. Myself, I'm from the Children's Institute at University of Cape Town. My name is Paula, and I'm a senior researcher whose speciality is children's socioeconomic rights. Chairperson, we would like to ask if the AIDC and BJC slots could be combined so that we can have a bit longer considering the coalition status.
Yeah, I'll share the 20 minutes between
you. Thank you, Chair. Before we get into the meat of the presentation, we'd just like to put on record again that the coalition doesn't agree with the VAT increase, the decision that was made in February this year. We reiterate that this decision has made South Africa's tax mix more regressive and will increase inequality and stifle economic growth. Combined with the impact of the fuel levy increases and the slow economic growth, poor and low-income households are bearing a disproportionate load of the burden. And we've presented twice that there are other options for improving revenue which should be considered. We've presented these options in our two submissions, and we've also costed them. And these include increasing company income tax, personal income tax, property tax, and introducing a luxury VAT rate. At no stage of the process have these options actually been debated, and we are a bit perplexed because we're not sure where in the budget cycle the public is actually given a chance to debate and comment on the revenue mix. There doesn't seem to be a place in the cycle for that to happen. And we really appreciate this committee's recommendation that tax proposals should actually be tabled as proposals in the MTBPS in October, allowing for at least a 6 months public consultation process before those decisions are implemented. Because if they're announced in February as decisions, there is no time for public consultation, and it's very hard to reverse the decisions, especially indirect taxes. You can't pay them back. So we still call on Parliament to exercise its constitutional legislative mandate with regards to the passing of money bills and to reject the VAT increase. We believe in terms of our interpretation of the VAT Act that could be done in October still, so that this VAT increase only applies for 6 months and is reverted back to 14%. If, however, Parliament decides not to make this choice and instead decides to accept the increase and leave it at 15, we call on Parliament to implement comprehensive mitigating measures. Our recommendations on mitigating measures, I'm briefly going to touch on zero rating. My colleague from IEJ will go into more detail because they have done the research in this regard. But in summary, what we are saying as a coalition is we'd like to retain the existing 19 items that are already zero rated. We would support the zero rating of the 6 items identified by the panel. If Parliament decides to choose on the issue of sanitary pads between zero rating them or distributing them, we would go for the distribution mechanism as that has more impact for poor and low income households. And it looks like the zero rating has more benefit for wealthy households. We call on chicken to be included in a basket of zero rated items. we are worried about the lack of protein in the basket. And if you look at our stunting rates and our high anemia rates for women of childbearing age, which is at 26% for anemia and 27% for stunting for kids under 5, we have a protein deficiency problem. Poor people need access to protein. So we need to have more protein on the zero-rated list. We would also like the Parliament to consider other items that scored highly in both the IEJ research, which Neil will talk about, and also in the panel's own research. So the panel looked at 66 items, only presented on 8, but there are other items there that may be scored highly, which could be looked at. And we've got a list here we would suggest is sorghum meal powder and maybella, other canned fish other than pilchards and sardines, powdered soup, instant yeast, soya products. Just to note that soya mince is a major player in the National School Nutrition Program, so zero rating soya products would save the DBE money and also ensure that DBE can reach actually more children with its school nutrition program. We'd also like to investigate whether tea, candles and matches, and coal. We also support the call for investigating peanut butter to be added. It also plays a large role in the school feeding scheme and in the food that the creches feed children who are under 5. And it's a good source of protein for children. It's also a non-perishable item in that it stays long. It doesn't need refrigeration. And the IEJ research has revealed that if you include peanut butter, it would only lose 120 million rand worth of VAT. So it's not a large loss in terms of the VAT revenue. On the social program front, which is where we're going to concentrate, when we look at social grants, we support the panel's recommendations with regards to increasing social grants, in particular with regards to the child support grant. The panel proposes an additional 20 rand per month be added to the CSG, which would take it from 400 rand a month to 420 rand a month. This would cost the fiscus about 3 billion rand, and provide an additional 456 rand per year to households in decile 1, which are the poorest decile, which is really where we should be targeting any intervention. If this addition is made in October 2018, after the already promised 10 rand inflation increase, the CSG would total 430 rand. Our reasons for supporting this proposal are based on the following considerations. The CSG is South Africa's biggest and most successful poverty alleviation program for children. Investing further in this program is a sure bet due to the wealth of credible evidence on the program's positive impact on reducing child poverty rates and improving nutrition, health, and education outcomes. It reaches over 12 million children at the moment who are mostly the poorest children. South Africa still has a very high child poverty rate, indicating that further investment in the CEG is much needed. Of the total population of 19.6 million children, 12.7 million, which is 65%, still live below the Stats SA upper bound poverty line. This national average masks provincial variations, and in particular rural-urban variations. So, for example, in KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape and Limpopo, over 75% of children live in poverty, whereas in Gauteng and Western Cape, the rate is under 45%. So what you can see is that child poverty is highest in the rural areas, especially of the former homelands at 86%, compared to 50% in your urban areas. So we agree with the panel, and they specifically say this, that further investment in the CSG has the potential to reduce urban-rural inequality because of the higher uptake of the CSG in your rural provinces. The increased financial flows into the rural areas will also stimulate the growth of rural economies. Another point in the CSG's favor is that it's particularly pro-poor. The panel presents an analysis of all the social grants. So this is on page 71 of the report. And they show that 74% of all households in decile 1 receive a CSG, compared to the next biggest contender, which is the old age pension, at 26% of households. This means that further investment in the child support grant will definitely reach the poorest of the poor. Another consideration is that the child support grant which is 400 rand, is significantly below the Stats SA food poverty line of 547 per month. So it's about 150 rand short of the food poverty line. And in South Africa, we have 7 million children living below the food poverty line. That's 36% of our children. And this means these children are not receiving sufficient food to meet their basic needs. And this can also be illustrated in our stunting rate, which is at 27% of children under 5. So children who are living below the food poverty line are likely to end up stunted. And stunting has a long-term negative impact for the affected child and the country's economy due to the negative and often irreversible impact on the child's ability to develop, learn, and enter the labor market. What we also seen, it's similar to what other presenters have shown, is that while we see hunger rates are going down, child hunger rates are going down, which is good, our stunting rate is going up. So if you look at page 16 of our submission, you'll see that the stunting rate is starting to go up again. And this illustrates that people are less able to afford food of highly nutritious value, especially protein, and are having to rely on the starches for energy. This is also what's fueling the obesity crisis as well.
You know, we're at 10 minutes, but we're not going to be hard and fast, you know.
Okay.
But I think the main point, too, is, I think really what we'd like a bit more of, I hope I'm speaking for the majority, is we're not disagreeing necessarily with anything you say. We'd like more concrete proposals on how we strike trade-offs, you know. I mean, it's correct, you can come here on a principle basis, and this is your position, and that's it, and if you don't concede to us, we will do whatever. Or you can engage with us. Yeah, so I think it's more focusing on that. Yeah, okay. Go ahead, Beth.
I think, you know, when it comes to the dialogue later, we would be happy to engage in trade-offs. I think we're trying to present the principal position here, and then we can compromise. Our only concern with the panel's recommendation around the child support grant is that it's the 20 rand a month is very low, considering that the child support grant is so far from the food poverty line. So we've actually suggested on page 17 of our submission an incremental increase to the CSG over 3 years to bring it up to the line of the poverty line, which will have less of an impact on the budget than increasing it suddenly now. So for instance, if you increase it 50 rand twice a year, so in April and October, by October 2020 it would reach the level of the food poverty line. When it comes to sanitary products, we've already said that we agree with the recommendation of direct provision. The evidence does, however, show that the direct provision hasn't succeeded so far, so we would suggest that there be a participatory process to discuss the most effective distribution mechanism, and that this process specifically engage women and girls in poor and low-income households to find out what would be the most appropriate way for them to receive the products. On scholar transport, we were a bit disappointed that the panel didn't look at transport because, you know, transport is a major cost for households. They spend a large portion of their budgets on transport, particularly because of South Africa's spatial inequalities. And with the fuel increase and the VAT increase, transport costs have increased substantially, particularly public transport. So we would like to see consideration of more subsidy towards public transport programs. With regards to scholar transport, one of our members, Equal Education and Equal Education Law Center, have been calling for a while for a conditional grant for scholar transport, because what's been happening is that there is money for scholar transport given to the provinces, but it gets absorbed by provincial DBEs for other education costs, and it's not reaching the scholars, whereas if there was a conditional grant with adequate funding, then it would reach the scholars and actually subsidize transport, which would really help households because of the large portion of budget spent on transport. On the school nutrition program, we also agree that great investment in the program would be a good idea, but we think more discussion needs to happen on the details of exactly where that investment would be, because the panel doesn't make clear recommendations, and there's not much in-depth research into the program. It's just preliminary research on its impact. You know, two areas, for instance, that could be considered is improved funding to enable the schools to implement all three pillars of the program. So the food garden pillar and the nutrition education pillar are not adequately funded and aren't being implemented properly. Also, preliminary research is showing that providing breakfast in addition to lunch really improves outcomes of the program. So that's another option. You know, both require increased funding, but exactly where are you going to channel that funding to which intervention maybe needs more discussion. On a last point, just to emphasize that expanding the school nutrition program will not deal with the stunting problem. Our stunting problem is because our children under 5 are not receiving sufficient nutrition. So we worry that there aren't sufficient recommendations for the children under 5. There are various ways to reach these children. The one is the ECD per capita subsidy, which goes to children in creches, which could increase and would definitely increase access to nutrition. The problem with this is that it doesn't reach children under 2, and it also, that subsidy has to pay for the multiple costs of running that center. So whether that will actually result in a nutrition benefit is not sure. The other way is direct distribution of baby food to mothers at clinics. That's another option to consider, especially for your under 2s. And then lastly, I have to finish off again with punting the child support grant, because this has the biggest reach for this age group of children under 5, and the take-up for under 1s has been greatly improving. It has been lagging for many years, but there's a big improvement lately. So increasing this amount will improve both maternal and child health, and as Sama pointed out, would actually also increase the cash that a mother has to pay for the transport to do her regular clinic visits. At the moment, many clinic visits are not attended for the immunization and growth tracking of babies because mothers do not have the transport to get there. We are finished. Thank you.
15 minutes. Neil, you've got 5 minutes, but we'll allow a bit more. We'll allow you because you represent a whole lot. But we would like a more focused input on where we are. Neil, over to you.
Chair, Neil Zappi representing IEJ. It's a separate slot.
So who's representing AIDC?
I do.
So you want another 10 minutes?
No, yeah. That's fine. We're on the presentation.
Yeah, you can have another 5 minutes if you want. And then Neil is completely separate.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. We have to manage the time because, you see, this is the fourth public hearing around this effective. And really, we're at a particular stage, and it'd be nice to be more focused on that. So, my friend from AIDC, do you want to say anything? You're fine. Okay, over to you, Neil. You've got 10 minutes. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks to the committee. We have circulated the Budget Justice Coalition submission to the Treasury School for Public Comments dated 3rd of September, so I'm going to be referring to that document, so if members can have a look at that. You know, in the introduction we outlined the critical issues around what our response is to the report of the VAT panel. I'm not going to go into that. We're going to focus primarily on the question of the VAT zero rating and the luxury rating based on the detailed report commissioned by the Institute for Economic Justice. So I think that, we'll take what Paula has said on behalf of the BJC as read. If we go on to page 7 of the submission under 4.1, we indicate that we support the panel's conclusion that the current zero-rated items should be kept as such, and we support the 6 items identified by the panel for zero-rating. However, the fundamental problem we have with the panel report is twofold. Firstly,
it's our problem. Do we have this? Because I don't have it in my pack. Which one is it? Oh, it's the same one. Oh, I see. You're referring. Okay, right.
Yeah, so, Chair, we're zoning in on the issue of the zero rating as it relates to the IEJ research report, and are going into a little bit more detail on that. So the fundamental issues that we have with the panel report are, firstly, we feel that the undue focus in the panel report on the poorest deciles 1 to 4, excludes a lot of the low-income households. We know that around 60% of the South African population are categorized as poor. Therefore, mainly focusing on the deciles 1 to 4, we believe, is a problem. Secondly, the IEJ report and the Budget Justice Coalition submission to the VAT panel identified 66, if I remember correctly, items which were good candidates for zero rating. The panel only appears to consider 8 and then doesn't actually explain why, in terms of its own criteria as well as the criteria set out in our research, why it has excluded the 58 items. So in our submission to the in response to Treasury's call for public comment, we requested that there be clarity on how this decision was arrived at to exclude the 58 items, and what the panel's view is on those items that are advanced in relation to zero rating. You remember in the IEJ research report, we identified certain criteria where certain items were good candidates for zero rating based on their disproportionate benefit to the poor, or other criteria such as socioeconomic considerations, gender equity considerations, and so on, which are clearly set out in the report. So on page 8 of the BJC document, we indicate 3 problems with the methodological approach of the VAT panel. Firstly, as I indicate, the report does not list how the 66 items fared with regard to the 5 tests which the VAT panel set out. And the 5 tests are indicated at the bottom of page 7 and the top of page 8. I won't go into those. Those are set out in the VAT report. Secondly, the issue that I've raised, which is the emphasis given to deciles 1 to 4, we believe is inappropriate. And we set out in detail in the IEJ research why concentrating on deciles 1 to 7, which includes low-income households as well as the very poor, which would have been far more appropriate. And this is particularly relevant in the context of the recession, in the context of rising prices, rising fuel prices, etc. So the VAT increase has exacerbated the situation, as PAXA has clearly outlined, and as Paula from the BJC has outlined. Therefore, there's no reason why a large portion of low-income households should be prejudiced because of an arbitrary distinction between the very poor and low-income households. Thirdly, there's no evidence, we argue, of gender or age-sensitive analysis being applied to all the 66 items considered. We understand that the VAT panel, in arriving at certain decisions, didn't limit itself to the 1 to 4 lowest deciles. So, for example, the question of sanitary pads and other issues take into account the gender impact of that, as well as the age impact of, you know, school uniforms, etc. Even those don't qualify in terms of the test set by the panel in terms of the disproportionate benefit being passing to the lowest four deciles. But then it should be also applied to all the 66 items, not just those items. In other words, the needs of women, children, mothers, and pensioners at times differ from those of the general population and should be given special consideration. So the IJ report offers detailed consideration of this, highlighting how zero-rating certain products would disproportionately benefit these groups. So we feel we've been asked by the panel to take on faith that none of the other 66 items, in other words, the 58 items, were appropriate candidates without being presented with evidence of this, and we'd requested in the run-up to these hearings that that evidence be provided. So we still, you know, await that information. On page 9, we set out the candidates for zero rating. So, Chair, you're asking what's being proposed, and we set out in detail in table 1 there on page 9 that that the panel should look at, should respond in relation to the items contained in that table, and in particular, we suggest that zero rating most of these items would disproportionately benefit poor and low-income households, including sorghum meal, powder, and mabela, mapani worms, other canned fish, whiteners. The list is there on page 10. And for most of those items that we list there, women benefit disproportionately. And a key debate, obviously, is around the question of poultry, which has already been raised, and the fact that chicken is a major source of animal protein for poor and low-income households. We note that the panel had a disagreement within it on this particular issue and couldn't reach consensus. And we think that there's a good reason for that disagreement because this is such an important issue for poor and low-income households. And the issue of the stunting rate was spoken about by Pax and by Paula, and I think this is a critical question which needs to be addressed. In addition to the benefits of zero rating certain items of chicken for the poor and low-income households, there are also the industrial policy implications in terms of reviving the sort of industry. The local producers are being hit very hard by the imports of cheap products, and there have been discussions that we've seen in the social media, for example, around the possibility that that South African products could be zero rated. That's obviously a complicated discussion which needs to be explored further. So we don't agree that the reasons advanced for excluding chicken from the list outweigh the socioeconomic benefits, especially for pregnant women and children, of including chicken for further zero rating, and therefore call for chicken to be added to the list. Further, in the IJ report, not all forms of baby food, infants...
10 minutes, but if you can just round up.
Please. Okay. Yeah. Infants and children's clothing and footwear pass the primary test, but disproportionately assist women and children in relation to the areas identified. And we identify further issues on page 11, which members can see for themselves. Finally, Chair, we had argued right from the beginning, as the Budget Justice Coalition, that the fact that revenue collection has failed, that state capture has resulted in reduction in revenue to the fiscus, should not result in the punishment of the poor, who had nothing to do with that failure. And therefore, one of the issues that we said needed to be addressed was the introduction of a luxury VAT rate to claw back some of the losses. But in addition, as you know, we had set out a range of other tax measures, progressive tax measures, which we believe, in any event, regardless of this particular challenge around VAT, should be introduced. And we've spoken at length to the committee before. But just on the question of the luxury rate, on page 11, we outline that 9.6 billion out of 17 billion could be clawed back by a 25% luxury rate on a basket of luxury goods. According to the IEJ report, the ad valorem luxury tax only raises currently about 3.8 billion, projected to rise to 4.8 billion, and argue that there's further room to tax luxury consumption on goods only bought by the rich, as well as upper segments of other goods markets, for example, fancy cars, expensive fridges, and so on. And given that the higher share of luxury items is imported, This shouldn't unduly dampen domestic demand and could assist in closing the balance of payments. We argue that access to access to luxury goods is an expression of inequality, and we are concerned that this issue has not been dealt with. And finally, Chair, the table 2 on page 12 provides a sample of items that could be candidates for luxury VAT rate, as well as the revenue that it could raise. And the summary of our recommendations is contained on page 19, Chair, just for members' reference. Thanks.
No, we're going to put all this on the table, and we've got 3 weeks to organize all our thoughts, so there'll be plenty of time. I'm pleading with people to stick with time because we're far behind time now. And can we stick to 10 minutes as far as possible? Remember that we're going to read every bit. It's not as if there's so much that we can't read over the next 3 to 4 weeks. So next is IEJ. Is that right? It's PwC.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present here today. What we thought we would do is to consider the factors, or to mention the factors, to talk about the factors that one should consider when you're considering which zero rating and which items you want to zero rate. So when we look at it, we thought that there are two factors that literally you want to consider, which is your tax policy as well as your economic considerations. So I will be talking about your tax policy considerations, and my colleague Lulu will be talking about the economic considerations, and then Greg at the end will be commenting on the recommendations of the panel as a whole. So I thought it would be interesting.
We're pleading. Look, we've got 4 weeks before we sit again with this thing, and certainly I will have read every sentence, every full stop, every comma, and actually Tandi has no choice. She's our resident expert here. Tandi will have read everything, and so will I. And Zakhele will have put it down on the table, and so will Treasury. So nothing passes us by. Over to you.
I thought this was very interesting to look at, that when the VAT was introduced in 91, there were only a few items that were recommended for zero rating. By the time the VAT rate was introduced in 93, there were an additional list of items from item 11 to item 19. And the reason why this was done is specifically to assist the poor. And that is something that one needs to remember when you are deciding what items to zero rate from a local consumption perspective. So it would be great if we could standard rate everything and assist the poor through grants and targeted funding. But the reality is that is not possible. So when you're looking at your zero rating, what factors should you be considering when you are deciding what I need to zero rate? So on the first item, which is ease of administration, you've got to look at how easy is it to implement a change of a rate from a standard rate to a zero rate. And that is pretty simple from a systems perspective. However, when we're starting to get to the compliance and how do vendors comply with this, that is where the difficulties start coming in. Because if you take, for example, a distinction between, and I know that the conversation has been going on about locally produced chicken, if you're going to make a distinction between locally produced chicken and imported chicken, the reality is that people who are going to be selling chicken are going to struggle with deciding what is zero rated and what should not be zero rated. So it's very important that you try and assist the taxpayer and you assist the vendor in making life a whole lot easier to assist them to comply. So when we look at the efficiency of VAT, we can see that VAT is instantly felt, both from a revenue gain perspective for the fiscus, but it also hits the poor immediately. And that we've seen with regard to discussions with business, that they saw that that people started spending less immediately because they had less money to spend because the cost of goods had gone up. So we definitely agree with the panel with regard to other mechanisms to achieve relief to the poor. The panel was definitely in agreement with the Davis Tax Committee's recommendation that you've got to try and find ways, i.e. grant, to assist in an increased grant funding to see whether that can be a mechanism to assist the poor. So we definitely support that. When we look at the current zero-rated items, what we did not see was the panel re-looking at those items. And we definitely feel that there is room for that area to grow, specifically B because the purpose of re-looking at these items is to see which items are consumed mostly by the poor. Again, I will reiterate that the purpose of a zero rating is to assist the poor, and that is where we actually need to go. So when we look at the last item from a tax policy perspective, which is a definition of the of what item you want to zero rate, again, I will talk about another example, which is uniforms. Is how difficult is it to actually draft a provision that is going to make it easy for people to comply with to say that certain shirts or shoes or pants or skirts can be zero rated. From a practical implementation perspective, that is almost impossible. So you are then going to have a reality that compliance levels are going to drop because people are not going to be able to actually implement what the law is saying. Again, this feeds right into the chicken debate of should you make a distinction between imported and locally produced chicken for exactly the same reason. So I will now turn over to my colleague because she will take up the economic section.
Thank you. So as Leslie has already raised quite a few of the items, I'm just going to focus on some of the additional aspects from an economic perspective. Again, just to reiterate the consumption by the poor, and that goes to re-looking the current list and the items on the list, and then chicken, the number one item of expenditure by low-income households, not being included. Then one of the items raised as a potential challenge for the zero rating in making sure that the value actually accrues or the benefit actually accrues to the consumers and don't go somewhere else in the system is the fact that, first of all, the market structure, specifically in terms of food, is a competitive market structure. The information is widely available. So consumers are very aware of this. They're very aware of the changes that have been made. And as such, there's data and there's information available which will make it possible to ensure and to make sure that the market actually enforce the benefits flowing to the consumer. In addition, Statistics South Africa also monitor prices on a regular basis, so this could be a way in making sure that the price benefits do in fact flow to consumers, that information is available. In terms of the potential of changing spending patterns and how that could potentially in future reduce or further increase the revenue loss, this is actually true for all products and not specifically for, let's say, a product like chicken. And there's not sufficient data available at this point in time to actually support a view like that. And then lastly, just in terms of the merit goods and making sure that we get products on the list, one of the things that was raised a few times already this morning is the diversifying of the items in the basket in terms of protein sources and in terms of health outcomes is in fact improved health outcomes is in fact one of the best ways to reduce inequality for households, combined of course with education. I think that covers it from an economic perspective.
Okay, I just want to touch on a couple of things. The panel, one of the terms of reference was that the panel should consider whether zero rating can be better achieved by disaggregation of currently zero rated items. So, for example, your fruits and vegetables. A large portion of your fruits and vegetables are consumed by the wealthy. So, for example, your broccoli, your strawberries, 85% of those kinds of fruits and vegetables are consumed by the wealthy. Only 15% are consumed by the poor. You know, maybe what could be considered as a positive list of items. So you'd have your basic vegetables and fruits, your vegetables, cabbage, potatoes, spinach, tomatoes, green mealies, onions, beetroot, pumpkin, carrots, sweet peppers. All of those tend to be consumed more by the poor as opposed to the more exotic kind of vegetables and things like that. Again, fruits, again, it's disproportionately consumed by the rich, but we can't ignore the nutritional benefits here. So we'd argue that you'd limit it to certain kinds of basic fruits, your oranges, your apples, bananas. One more thing was the chicken, around the chicken thing. I mean, it has been mentioned quite a lot in the presentations today. there is a concern around the market abuse issues, and that is a very real concern. But you know, if it could be considered that we address those market concerns and active measures are taken to address those market abuse, I think that would make the case for the zero rating of chicken far stronger. Sanitary products, we acknowledge the promotion of horizontal equity and the fact that a zero rating will lead to higher demand by poorer households and therefore increase the progressivity of the measure. Just a question that we wish to raise without taking a position on the matter is that, you know, it can't be argued that a substantial and significant portion of the cost of the fiscus of the zero rating in this case will accrue to wealthier households. It's just the numbers are just there. School uniforms. I think the critical thing here is the reliability of data, definitional issues, significant planning required in what is actually zero rating, what is required to be zero rated. So we're of the view that those problems are practically insurmountable, and we'd argue quite strongly for a state spending program, a suitably tailored and designed state spending program to address those concerns. I think the biggest thing here is you want to get as much bang for your buck out of a zero rating as possible, and you want to make sure that the targets...
You're in 10 minutes, right? Quickly, please.
Okay, so yeah, I'll wrap up then. That's all I wanted to say. So, yeah.
And I haven't had a chance to read all the stuff, and there's no obligation on one member to read all the time. I take it Tandy's read every word. But, you know, you submit things at the last minute. It's impossible for us, you know. What we normally do is get a feel for what you're saying, and then we read through it subsequently. So don't you worry. We will read through everything. And then we've got a brilliant researcher, Antonia, and a brilliant content advisor. Okay, over to you, my friend.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm Ziyanda Machogweni. I'm the acting GM Broilers for the South African Poultry Association. And I don't come alone today. I've come with our Chair, Aziz Suleiman. And we've also brought two members, heads of member associations of SAPA, in the form of Chris Skete, as well as Martina Stander today. We'll also be using the services of PwC, seeing as they are here and they've presented. I hope they won't charge us for this. Thank you so much, Chair. I think probably the question here is, why chicken? Because I think we've established that if we want to give any benefit to your lower income groups, zero rating of foodstuffs will probably be the way to go. Why chicken? If you look at that food basket, you will probably find that the biggest spend is on chicken. And if we look at it this way, I'll say it in my Xhosa, which means typically everybody enjoys some meat. Chicken then becomes an obvious choice because it's you get basically more bang for your buck. You get much more protein for every rand or cent that you spend on chicken. The good thing, if we were to zero rate chicken, you will see also later in the presentation, is that actually we will create more jobs. So if somebody were to ask you, why not just increase the grant? The grant will not create further employment for you necessarily. So probably the best way to go is to make chicken accessible, and we'll also talk to the nutritional value of that. Perhaps you want to take a slide?
Thank you very much. It is significant in doing the analysis in terms of which food items should be included on the list and what is in fact consumed by low-income groups. And it's apparent from that slide that chicken represents 13% of the spend and is in fact 30% higher than the second item, which is mealie meal. It's also important in looking at that list that a number of those items are in fact zero rated, and the few that are not have, the panel has in fact recommended that they be zero rated. I think this goes to the point in terms of the debate within the panel and the disagreement about chicken. I mean, in our view, the economic stack up as far as that's concerned, and there's a really good argument from that particular perspective. In terms of looking at the two particular points that are relevant, and just to explain some of the data behind it, and to address some of the concerns around regressivity. And if you look at that analysis from income group 1 to income group 10, you will see that spend at income group 1 represents that 13% and is much higher than anything else that is in that space. So it's higher than beef, it's higher than pilchards, it's higher than lamb. So it really is consumed by that. I mean, if you look as you move up, as people's income grouping increases, by the time that you get to income group 10, then beef and veal starts becoming a significant component as far as that's concerned. So you see that it's very unlikely that there will be a move or change of patterns from that particular perspective. So that consumption or the regressivity is sorted, and the abuse by or the advantage to higher households is limited as far as that's concerned. There's also been a big debate around imports and the way that we deal with that. While I think the risks around that are appreciated and were dealt with in detail by the committee, it is important to note that as a tax instrument, VAT zero rating is not a good instrument in terms of dealing with that, just from the compliance risk that is dealt with. So we would not like that argument to defeat what we achieve the advantage to the lower income households. And the last point that has also been made is just around the protein. You'll also see on the graph on the right hand side, I mean, from a protein perspective per rand spent, it is really affordable. We do need meat on the list of zero ratings, and chicken is the right one in the circumstances.
Thank you, Charles. I think that's the last time I'm giving you airtime. thank you so much. And I think, actually, talking to what you were talking about, the Institute of Economic Justice gave two challenges and two options with regarding zero rating. I'm actually giving a third one, particularly targeting the group that you were worried about, which is your children under 2. The best way to do it is to zero rate chicken, because then you take the chicken into the household and the child that is 2 and below has the access to the protein at home, and then that will most definitely go a long way in terms of preventing stunting. That said, the other challenge that existed was in the way that we defined the products to be zero rated. We've gone back and done our homework on that, and we've come back with a much better definition and a clearer definition of the products that we want to zero rate. And we speak of primary chicken, and that is, hoofs and feathers off, that is a whole chicken that has been defeathered, eviscerated, and it is a whole chicken. That whole chicken, you can cut it up into pieces, which you can still aggregate into a whole chicken, and you can also freeze that chicken. So essentially, the definition that we have given essentially says that this is what we talk about when we talk about that primary chicken. So it's a whole bird, And that whole bird you can cut, you can package whole, you can package in pieces, and you can also freeze it. So that is essentially that. And I think you spoke about imports. What we've done now with this definition is, one, it protects the local market, which you do want to, we do want to assist the local industry. What it doesn't include, what the definition doesn't include, though, is where you look at single cuts. Your imports are mainly your thighs and legs. So that would not be included in terms of the zero rating. So we'd look at the local, at the local industry, have the local industry create those jobs so that people participate in the economy, have work, and they participate in the local economy. So we don't include those single cuts of meat. And what we're talking about there is number two on your slide. What we've also excluded in products is further processed products, your marinated goods, your skinless breasts, your crumb chicken, as well as your spiced and smoked. So we've really gone back and done our homework to see what is consumed within that income group and how do we make good on the promises that we make with this submission, that the local industry would be able to create that 11,000 jobs that I think Fairplay spoke to and we speak to in our with our initial slide. Then you'll probably also say what is the impact of this, because you said this as well, that you do want the benefit, to see the benefit of this. If you look at this slide, you will see that initially there were figures that were put into the report. We've done our own homework, and we see that those figures were underestimated a bit, so we have put in what we think are the real figures. But that said, so we're looking at about 1.3 billion to 1.9 is the cost to the fiscus. However, this only represents 6 to 8% of that increase in VAT. Secondly, if you look at other benefits, for instance, we spoke about the health benefits in terms of stunting, that cannot be underplayed, because what we have found is that when you have
10 minutes,
right, when you have children that have not had access to good nutrition at ages below 5, those children essentially become poor doers. They have learning difficulties, so the school system cannot cope with them. And obviously they cannot land the good jobs because they are excluded. And they are also excluded from being from playing meaningfully within the economy. So what you get for 1.9 billion, which is just 9% of our education budget last year, is that we will have children that are not stunted, or at least we reduce the stunting rate, and those children can actually play a meaningful role within our economy. You will ask, where are the checks and balances? The checks and balances to make sure that the industry does not get all of the benefit, they lie with the fact that the industry is essentially a price taker when it comes to retailers. So retailers are our customer, and they keep us on our toes. Secondly, the consumer is probably the biggest monitoring device we have, because they will want lower prices. So those are the checks and balances that we have. But the industry has gone further, and I don't think you should hear it from me. You probably need to hear it from the chair in terms of undertakings that they make regarding what they think should happen when it comes, or if they were to get the zero rating. And I will give over to Aziz Suleiman.
Yeah, you're at 12 minutes, 1 minute is more.
2 minutes.
Thank you, Chief.
I have to engage with you. There's no point in making long speeches. Very good.
No,
please.
I will just keep it short. I'm Aziz Suleiman, the chairman of SAPA. And SAPA is more than 100 years old. And it represents 80% of the producers in the country. So almost all the guys are there. the South African poultry producers herein, represented by the South African Poultry Association and the broiler organization, support the principle contained in the Woolard panel's report under paragraph 4.2, that the benefits of zero rating should be fully passed on to the consumer and not absorbed by the producers or the retailers. So this is just undertaking that we do, that we will check that the benefit of zero rating chicken will go to the consumer, the low income consumer, and not to the producers and to their pockets like as it being assumed. So South African poultry producers see the ultimate gain is for the country, the consumer, and for the local chicken industry. By doing that, people will consume more chicken, and it will be locally chicken. As Dr. Zianda said, it will be in a full portion. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for indulgence as well.
The Art Chamber of Baking. Hands up those of you in existence. Baking. Where are you? Yeah, there you are. Look, let me explain very quickly for those of you who don't know. This is meant to be a committee day. Tandy and others decided to make it a plenary. And worse still, instead of the normal 15:00, it's now 14:00. And Parliament rises tomorrow afternoon. So we're under those pressures. And the main thing is not to just listen. We want to engage with you. And we really want to read what you're saying and then carry on the process. Okay, over to you, sir. Introduce yourself. Yeah. All right. Okay. Very profound question. You don't have to reply.
Okay. Are we online now? Here we go. Thank you. Chair, thanks very much. And just a quick response to that. On the agenda, it showed that we were actually the South African Chamber of Banking. So we are close to books, we are close to money, but we're actually the industry that makes the dough. Chair, I'm only going to work sort of at a high level through the presentation that we've got, because I know it's been submitted to the panel and it's been responded to, and there's a lot of information in the panel's report as well. But if I could just take you through a few of the key issues. The industry, the baking industry, is most concerned about the high levels of poverty and food insecurity in the country, often quoted as high as 25%, and it depends on where it's coming from. But I think we can accept that we have unacceptably high levels. The other is we need to make bread more affordable because it is a nutritious product. Bread is part of the National Nutrition Scheme of the Department of Health. And white bread and brown bread is fortified, and we must make every effort to ensure that the poorest sectors of our population have access to the fortified products and better nutrition. The industry itself is not going to benefit from directly. There may be a small increase in volumes of business, but it's likely to be a swing from brown bread to white bread for those people who can afford it. It's often an aspirational product, and it's a product that can be eaten, or by poor people is often eaten on its own, whereas brown bread is consumed with some other products. The industry in itself looked at it, and when we decided to make a submission, said it's the right thing to do. In the previous presentation by PwC, and I must acknowledge that they have assisted us greatly in our submission as well. They highlighted the fact that poultry is right at the top of the products consumed by poor people, or the amount of money that's spent on them. Brown bread is at number 3 and white bread at 8. So we would like to see the full range of brown bread products there, and probably eventually having a zero-rated white bread chicken sandwich as well. The industry itself is involved with fortification. The fortification mix has been reviewed. It's been reviewed, been under review for the last 3 or 4 years. But it does mean that the population is going to benefit from a better quality and better nutrition via bread. The sodium reduction is also a work in progress. We had to meet targets set by the Minister of Health for 2016. Initially, the industry thought it was impossible, but they all met the 2016 target, and we now have to get down to 380 milligrams per 100 grams of foodstuffs by June 2019, and many of the companies are already there. So bread is not an evil product. It's a very good product, and it's a great source of carbohydrate, plus minerals and vitamins that have been added. The bread industry, size, products, nutritional considerations, just a few big numbers. The annual production of bread, these are figures that have been supplied by SAGIS via statutory measure. The country is producing about 2.135 billion loaves of bread, of which white bread makes up 48.8%, just over a billion loaves. So that's what we're talking about in our submission and what the panel is considering. In terms of bread consumption in South Africa, we lag most developed nations. In Europe, the consumption is around 55 kilograms per person. South Africa, we're about 25, 26 kilograms. So, there's scope for improving the nutritional status of the country by just getting up to what is an acceptable norm for a developed country. The information that we get in the industry, or the way the industry is structured, we have five large plant bakery groups. I think you all know them. They got bad publicity about 10 years ago, and they've worked very hard to reverse all that because of the shenanigans that they got up to. Supermarket groups, there are five, and they have about 2,800 in-store bakeries between them. And the small bakery segment, that is the one that's growing most in terms of flour consumption and flour usage, as well as the home baking and the smaller informal bakery in the township. That is where we're seeing the most growth in terms of flour offtake. The retail food market, Pick and Pay, in their 2018 report stated that the formal sector owns about 26% of the market share, whereas the informal sector is 40%. I know that's always a moving target, but if we have to accept that 40% of bread also passes through that informal sector, we can sort of link that to consumption by poor people. The bread prices, StatsSA's bread prices, the ones that we make most use of, but we actually compared theirs against the actual prices on the shelves in Pick and Pay and Checkers. But what we're finding is that white bread is about 12% to 15% more expensive than brown bread, and that's because of the VAT component. Strip out the VAT, and in many, many cases, we'll find that white bread is actually cheaper than brown bread. So there's no, let's say, financial justification. Many years ago, in bad times in the country, it was assumed that poor people preferred eating white bread or brown bread. That isn't the case, and now I think that it's time for us to move on, and that we should give poor people what they call shoppers' dignity and give them the opportunity to choose the product that they wish to eat. I think unfortunately we do realize that poor people have very, very little opportunity to make good choices. I'll just jump to the contribution. On the 1 billion loaves, the bread industry is contributing about 1.6 billion rand to the fiscus in terms of that. So we appreciate that it's going to have to be a sacrifice, and it's going to be the benefit to the population is going to be spread across the better off and the poorer people. But if we want poorer people to have access to nutritious food that's fortified, that is low in sodium, and is convenient, we propose that bread be seriously considered. I think what we need to bear in mind is that the baking industry isn't going to benefit financially from it. Really, it might just be a small shift between brown to white. The volume of bread produced isn't going to increase dramatically, but if it is, upstream through the molds and back into agriculture, there should be benefits. But we don't want to quantify it. We don't see the reduction of VAT as being a money-making scheme. The main arguments for zero-rating VAT is that the use of zero-rating is well-targeted. We realize that bread is probably the most widely consumed of all the products, along with maize meal, but of those that are not zero-rated at the moment. So any reduction in VAT on those products or that particular product will be directly passed through to the consumer. I've mentioned the economic aspects, Chair. Other significant considerations, of course, there's a loss to the fiscus, which is a benefit to the consumers. The wheat industry and food security, balance of payments and rural employment, not much change there. We have to acknowledge, too, that 50% of the wheat that we mill in the country, which goes into bakeries, is imported. But the wheat industry itself is making great efforts to revive its fortunes. With regard to zero-rating white bread, ease of implementation is good because its brown bread is already there, so there's no big administration burden. The efficiency of the current system, I think what we do have to just comment on at this point is that many of the informal traders and operators are not registered for VAT, so we think there's scope for improvement in that space, but we have to bear in mind that the current system in respect of bread and in respect of the informal system sector is not as efficient as we'd like to see it. Chair, the system abuse and exploitation is always a worry. Is the consumer actually going to benefit from it? And that's been mentioned a little earlier today. We think that there's enough information out there and there's enough competition in the market to ensure that consumers are going to benefit from any reduction in VAT. White bread flour and cake flour, Chair, has also been included. It's not a product of the South African Chamber of Baking or our members, but it's an input into our industry, so we'd be very happy to see that those products become zero-rated. And I'd just like to comment on point five on the transparency of the slide, and that is that township-based micro-food enterprises derive as much as 50% of their revenue from the sales of scones, domboros, queen cakes, maguenos, that's a fed cook, amongst others. And these products are produced baked using white bread flour and cake flour, both of which will be fortified. Bread is currently fortified, white cake flour will be fortified when the new regulations come into effect. And home baking, as I mentioned before, especially in townships, is the fastest growing segment. Chair, I'm ready. I have reached the conclusion. I'd like to say that we had a lot of support from organized labor for our applications as well as the consumer bodies, and we do believe that the poorer sectors of the population will be better off with zero rating white bread, and I thank you.
Okay, members, over to you. Tandi? Come right.
Chair, I'm going to pretend that I'm not back to square one.
Sorry.
I'm going to pretend. But I need to make comment because it's very important. You know, when you listen to presenters, you get a feel that, one, there's scientists versus scientists in terms of conceptualization of what is the right thing to do. And I'm saying this as you look at the research work that is done by different groups and what different groups will have preferred should be looked at and approached. And that's not the issue. And that's where this intellectual loses a point. The point is that we need to increase revenue. And as part of increasing revenue, we need to find mechanisms, not methodology. Mechanisms to increase revenue. Now we get a presentation of methodology. Different methodologies are being applied and are argued as part of a scientific engagement, you see. And I'm going to make an example. You see, white flour is about to be fortified, and the debate, the perception, of course, not the debate, is whether white flour is nutritious, you see, or not. And I can argue differently. And when we also speak about stunting, there's a perception that stunting actually happens on the basis of lack of nutrition, access to nutritious foodstuff. But you leave the issue of culture in it, how people behave. You see, when people argued about how Europeans consume levels of bread, I happened to stay there for 6 months. It's a culture issue. It's not a nutritious argument. They are used to eating bread and they kill it with wine. You see? Now, we can sit the whole day here trying to argue, and I've listened very attentively to all the presenters and how they argue. You see, the South African Poultry Association says that they are a price taker. In the same vein, they contradict themselves and say, well, the price will be transferred to the consumer. That's what the last presenter said. Now, we can sit here the whole day and debate this issue. Chair, I need to appreciate in advance. The only unit that took this matter further to try and bring answers is what O'Neill has tried to do in their submission. Neil Coleman, they went further to look. Of course, they had the scientific debate trying to argue the analysis made by the panel on the basis of not having looked at women and children and so on, which is neither here nor here, neither here or there for what you want to attain currently. Now, let's look at all other presenters and the things that we will have to take into consideration. One, there's a suggestion that we need to look at peanut butter. We can pack it for later consideration because, but I want to ask, and every presenter can be a take on this one, how do you think we should address the issue of school uniform to have uniformity in price? Can you give us, I'm not suggesting you must do additional research work, but there's a way you can help us to answer to your question. It's the same thing that goes to water and electricity. You see, evidence has proven that high usage of water is done by companies actually, and electricity. Especially in the steel industry. Now, if we zero rate water, we are giving the miners and everybody else water for free. Now, let's build our arguments in such a way that they will be helpful in the debate to attain what we want to attain. COSAT, that's the issue that spoke to what I want you to consider, reconsider your arguments and maybe give us something different when we come back at a later stage. The South African Medical Association has raised a fundamental issue that leads to transport. Maybe we should pack it for the Committee of Transport to look at how they're going to deal with issues of transport subsidies, because that's not what we're going to deal with here. In this conjunction, we might want to look at issues that go to the value chain, to the end of the value chain, and deal with them. But you see, Lionel, I'm disappointed at you as a former leader of the Youth League, because I expected you to understand that there's an industrial policy matter here about free trade areas and agreements and what we have with the European Union and what the AGOA itself seeks to do to the South African poultry market. You see? And I'm also disappointed in the South African Poultry Association, because I thought they were going to argue their point further why localization is important or why zero rating of local products is important. Instead, they decided to argue for a specific product, what they call a primary. Primary chicken. Now, that was very biased to what a product they want to market to consume at the expense of the actual product that the poor consumes. You see? You raise a fundamental question that bone-in-meat chicken that is imported is the one that you must... We agree with you in principle. We want to protect infant industries. But if you don't argue in terms of the relevant product, which is your chicken feed, that's what the poor eat. They don't eat the whole chicken. They eat chicken feet, gizzards, livers. Giblets. Now you go for a specific product because you want it to run in the market and say, no, don't worry. In fact, the price will be actually transferred to the consumer. You don't have to worry about it. So now, please, good people. I like the Zulus from Pietermaritzburg. The reason why I like them, they raise the issue of increasing money, but they forget that we did not decrease money. People were made to not to be illiterate on purpose in South Africa, and for us to address that, it's going to take a very long time. You know, those who were doing it, they didn't think that they will be hit out later. They were thinking that they are dealing with a specific segment of society, but now, as they are today, they want to argue that governments must not bring policies to address what they did. It's interesting. So money available, the president says a minimum wage. They say no. You see? So I don't know where we stand. So I like you. You are there. You are bringing us a relief. You said the child support grant must increase to between 530 to 690. Let it be scientific so that when we argue for it, we can know what you say, Chair. You see, if it's not having scientific, that's why you must like this academics, because they will help you with other methodologies to determine whether it will work or not. So don't disalignate yourself to them. In a way, they will assist. Chair, I'm specifically disempowered by Nick not to speak to what will be the impact of industrial policy, because I know he knows. He knows why. He needs to be given more homework. Yes, he needs to be given more homework. This is the man who's changing the whole debate here. He knows the industrial policy, IPAP 1 to the last one, what it tends to achieve in terms of the protection of infant industries. This is the man who will say specific products as proposed here. Of course, they argue for ad valorem and other things, which Chris will argue differently in terms of what was collected in the last fiscal year. And you are not saying anything. It's like they never engaged again and convinced one another scientifically that the numbers did not come. You see? And as long as you can't show us how the numbers are going to come, of course, state capture, we were hoping to get as much money back as possible. People have run away and so on. And we'll try to get, is it going to make impact? Will it give us the 48 billion shortfall? You can't tell me that the Guptas have taken all the 48 billion all of them by themselves. It's not true, that thing. It's lost somewhere in the bucket, Comrade Mays. You see? So let's not make sweeping statements that we know scientifically they cannot be justified. Those people stole, but they didn't steal everything. The market stole the money. and by putting prices that are difficult and the poor who are not, you know, paid well, they can't. Let's be honest about in a debate. Let's all try to fix this thing, all of us. The products, I think the commission must explain about the 58 products, because there's a misconception that they are taken out. Now, moving forward, are you saying we must put the 10 rand additional when we look at the MTVPS and it will have an impact or it will not have an impact? That's an answer you can assist us in terms of what of exact proposition. In terms of the child support grant, if you look at it in how we changed it, the formula, actually the impact was more on increase, if I'm correct in the figures I'm trying to remember when you made the presentation. Your focus was more on ECG. I think there was an additional 16 million. I can't remember the figures. You need to help me to answer that question, because then my interest will be how we're going to deal with issues of ECG as child support grant moving forward to make sure that we assist at that level. So maybe the proposal is starting to shape towards that direction. But a fundamental issue has been raised about conditional grants. Chair, I'm building up an argument going forward, not asking necessarily questions, but looking at things that have been raised that are going to assist us as we mitigate. And these are all coming from the submissions made by the group anyway. Let me see the budget.
Just lunch to half an hour. I don't need lunchtime. You know me.
Chair, let me go to PwC. This is important for me. because I want them to propose tax compliance methodologies that will be workable. Because you see, fine, you say they won't be able to make a distinction, really. I mean, no, don't undermine the intellectual capacity of a South African consumer. The South African consumer today knows that there's 24% of brine in frozen chicken. They know that. And they know that it will be better to consume fresh chicken. And South African consumers know that there's gluten in bread. And that's the median South African who doesn't have a PhD in sociology like him or something like that. They will... yeah. Well, he's got the master's in sociology. Now, let's not pretend that also the prices that does not influence the product itself, because it's a determining factor in one point or another. So let's find a way to say, if you want to deal with tax compliance, these are the methodologies that you must be able to implement for the definition of items. Okay? When there was a probe that had inspired an archer that had a specific e-whatever thing, we are all alert as consumers that there is a product that has a thing that we must not eat. So we'll go to the archer and check or the spice and say, is it still in or not? And we're not buying it. Right? So we must have a tax compliance methodology. If PwC can't propose it for us, we'll ask other stakeholders to look at it for us to be able to define a product. You see, Europeans, when they buy an orange, they first look at a label that tells it whether it's an import. A small sticker. They've got colors, different shades. And from those colors, they can tell where the product comes from. If it's honey that has gone through radiation, through a machine because it's imported, and it's one that came from Zambia, because through customs it has not been put in machine, I know it. And I'll know which one I must not buy. So... let's not assume here. Chair, we have taken certain proposals that we're going to effect at a later stage, as suggested, in terms of the addition. I don't know whether people are going to be angry with me in the Department of National Treasury for the add-ons that are going to increase the list and so on. But at least
raising your view, but it's not a collective view at this stage. Nothing wrong in raising it. This is something you're mulling over. It signals to a younger, Momo.
The very last point.
No, raise them, but it's not a policy.
Yeah, the last
position.
Point I'm wrapping up is the maize meal. It's a presentation suggests that maize meal sits at 13% higher than what was said of the total. And it's not zero rated. You see what I'm saying? Is it zero rated? Now, I don't understand what's the argument. Is it to take it on the list or not to take it on the list? Yes, the presenters were raising it. So I want to understand the distinction that people were trying to make as they raised. Actually, let me stop there because I'll take more time.
Comrade Abrams Dantiso. Eric from the Ombuds office, nice to have you.
Julia,
go ahead, please.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you've disadvantaged me. You called me after the resident expert. Okay. Chair, my take is that there is a fundamental context for all of us, which one, Tand has referred to, we have an aim of increasing revenue. But two, we have to understand that we do not have to look at government and government only to be responsible for boosting our economy. My third fundamental context is that wealth is skewed in our country, and that is a reality. And we're now looking for answers. And amongst those who have, something has to give. And I'm saying there is so much out there that can be done to balance the situation, even before we come to what government can do. And my last context, fundamental, Chair, is the issue of poverty. And I think there are two things that come to me glaringly as presenters are presenting here, that we have a kind of mixed understanding of what is the choice of the rural poor, what is the choice of the urban poor. For example, you get a PwC, for example, saying that it's the rich that have fruit and veg. But when you come to rural poor, the people out there have got gardens, and therefore they thrive on plantations, if I may call it that. But the other considerations that we need to take into account is that I was happy when the last presenter referred to it, the issue of the health status. And I tend to, in this regard, agree with Comrade Tandy that what are the benefits of white bread, for example? And when you talk protein, what are you saying? Are you saying that for a meal to be nutritious, we need meat or we need protein? You know? Because you do have some alternatives that are easily accessible even to the poorest of the poor. Chair, the other point for me is the issue of education. And I think the taste buds can also be taught a thing or two. And I'm happy with the presentation that talks to issues of two-year-olds, for example. That's when, in fact, we should have started earlier on to make sure that the taste bud is for health purposes. Because we have come through times as the poor people in this country where the main aim was to fill the tummy. And we still have that. But we need to come to a point where we can all say, it's not so much about filling the tummy, but it's also about ensuring health. Now, the issue of economic boost should come in as the fundamental issue for me, because when you talk about what is it that the poor can access, you must not always stick to what is it that they can buy. But it should also be, what is it that they can provide for themselves? What is it that they can do to create the wealth for themselves and others? Thanks, Chair.
Chairman, through you, it's an interesting thing that I get the impression, and I'm open to correction, that the presentations today appear to accept the increase of 1% in VAT, and that this Parliament won't refuse to implement that in a month or so's time. So it's an interesting position that seems to be the accepted position. But if it's not the case, I'd love to hear. Probably all of you would say it's not a good thing. But it sounds to me like all of you accept it is going to happen. And I don't know that that's the case. The arguments, the question of alleviating the impact on the poor is really just what we've talked about here scratching the surface. Because the poor are consumers throughout the value chain in one way or another. They don't simply consume these items on a list. I think it's so the impact is not going to be alleviated, even if you include all the other items. And so, Mr. Chairman, it's interesting that a number of presenters have talked about the child support grant. And we've felt for a long time that the child support grant is far too low, and there's no scientific way that the current grant has been determined. And when it was originally introduced, there was a benchmark that was used to set them. That has long since been abandoned, and so consequently, the food survival level is what most people this morning are talking about, or those who are talking about it, the 530 Rand and the 699. And that's entirely achievable within the budget without any VAT increase. It simply requires a reprioritization of where the money is spent. And so I'm not sure that the presentations today have really dealt with the core issue of the impact of that 1% VAT increase on poor South Africans in a way that takes the complete impact into account. The zero rating of sanitary pads, for instance, is not going to suddenly change the use of sanitary pads. People don't use sanitary pads because they can't afford sanitary pads, not because they can't afford the additional 1% VAT. And so, I say again, Mr. Chairman, we're scratching the surface. So, what I'd like to put to those who are suggesting that the VAT should be skewed to luxury items. And there's a noble argument there. What about increasing the VAT rate to, say, 18%, do away with all zero-rated items, and simply hand the money back through the social security system to those who need the assistance? Do away with all the compliance issues, which some people seem to believe are not significant and can be dealt with. They are significant, and in many cases they won't be dealt with. The identification of what product is or isn't zero rated, all those issues disappear. You've already got a structure to support the poor through the social assistance network. What would the negatives be of such an idea? I'd like to hear that from the presenters today. And then, Neil, let's say we did go your 25% on luxury items. What would the impact be on the consumption of those luxury items? Quite clearly, the people who buy them can afford the 25%. But what would be the impact on the consumption, and consequently the impact on manufacture, and consequently the impact on jobs, and consequently the impact on the poor? I haven't done any studies, so I don't know what the answers are. But my gut feel is that if I'm going to pay 25% a tax as opposed to a 14 or 15% tax, I'm going to have to change my budgeting arrangement. And so there are consequential changes that would take place, and they too would affect the poor in one way or another. So the subject is a really fraught subject. And the reason we're talking about it today is because the VAT rate has been increased by 1%. And that has got an impact on all South Africans, but a predominantly an impact on poor South Africans. Particularly 9.6 or 9.8 million South Africans who should be working, creating more economic activity and simply can't find work. So I'd like some kind of comment on why that wouldn't work. And then Paula, I don't know why you wanted to phase in the child grant over 3 years. Where are you, Paula? You're hidden somewhere down there. Why don't we just increase it? It's the right thing to do. Why are you trying to make it easy for us? Are you saying that the children that are there now should be prejudiced, but only those born in 3 years' time should get the full benefit of it? I don't understand that argument. I mean, it's just an in principle thing I don't understand. Mr. Chairman, in terms of AGOA and the Poultry Association, we know that the AGOA agreement has enormous benefits for the South African economy. Enormous benefits. And it was nearly kiboshed because of some chicken issues. Isn't this a way of trying to get in behind the AGOA agreement and get some protection that was not achieved in those negotiations? Because essentially that's what we're going to do, is we're going to give the local production protection. What do you think the reaction from that, I don't want to say anything terribly rude, but rather unprofessional president across the Atlantic Ocean might be? You might have guessed that I might not have voted Republican had I been there to vote. So isn't that what's happening here? And the Baking Association, you are cooking the books, in my opinion, Greg, and you're helping them. You know, to suggest that somehow no more bread's going to be consumed, but people will move across to white bread, and that will somehow help the poor. I don't understand that. They'll still be hungry if they're going to buy one loaf of bread and still buy one loaf of bread, but it'll just be white bread. Of course it's going to change behaviours, but not a single extra loaf. It's not going to, there's no profit in this for the Baking Association or its members. I'm afraid I don't follow that logic. I am Dorf. I don't have a PhD. There you are. Thank you, Mr.
Firstly, I think the better, overall, I think the quality of inputs is quite good, actually. And I think that the better ones are excellent. And the more we listen to, you know, the people who come here regularly, the less enamored we get with the VAT proposal. We've never been enamored of it, but every time, Chris, you can communicate this to Yanga and Momo, every time people come here, we're less and less, let's say, enamored of it, right? So I want to compliment the people who made submissions. Very good, really. Obviously, we will have to work through them closely, and what we see for now, not having read every sentence of what you've said and browsed through them, you may find when you look at it more carefully, there are some challenges. But on the whole, it's very good, actually, I think. The next thing to say is that I don't know, I can't speak for others. In a public hearing, you don't come to final positions, obviously. But I think overall it's reasonable to say that the majority of us agree with, in terms of ideals, values, principles, with most of what most of you say. But at the same time, as Tandi says, we are where we are. For whatever reason. Okay, we agree to some or other degree the plundering of the state resources, slow economic growth, mismanagement, questions about the administration of SARS over the last 2 years or more, all of which in some or other way have contributed to where we are. But we are where we are. And we are moving towards more contained state expenditure. People are being hauled to account for, you know, slop and wasteful expenditure and so on. So there's no immediate overnight solution. All of us, I think, Parliament, government, the political parties and civil society, are in some or other measure responsible for where we are. I think this idea that civil society is somehow pure and can't be held to account for where the country is, frankly, I don't buy. However, of all the parties, civil society is less responsible for where we are, and it's the politicians in particular that must account and the political parties we come from. I think there's a majority view that it is regressive. So Treasury, you know what, we're not interested in any arguments from your side, right? It's a closed door. We're not interested anymore. One step forward we're taking, we don't want to hear it's progressive. And as we said before, to the people out there, it's meaningless, right? That's the sort of thing you do in master seminar rooms and so on. Now, we're also concerned that, obviously, whatever concessions we make on the VAT zero listing, it has to be somehow disproportionately favoring the poor. And where I think advances have been made in the submissions today is in that regard. You're much clearer now, at least we are much clearer listening to you, what are the items that would disproportionately benefit the poor. So in that regard, Treasury, can we urge that you take more seriously the submissions than you've done until now. Then on the issue of the release date of PAXA, I don't know why, Mervyn, you say 13th. Why don't you release it today? Today is the 12th. You said it in the public domain. Then to draw your attention to this, this is the third formal public hearings we've had with you. Some of you, not most of you, if not almost all of you, have engaged with Treasury. Then some of you were here when we previously had the VAT panel report. Now, we can't have endless discussions with you. But on the other end, we have to hear you now, practically speaking. I don't know how we're going to manage the time, because we have a three-line whip. It starts at 2 instead of 3. It was never meant to be on the agenda. And when we planned this thing, we had hoped to finish at 15:00. So we have to look at who's from Cape Town and who's not, and who can come in tomorrow morning. But those of you not from Cape Town, we prioritize to reply. Is one proposal I've got, but the members must decide. Then the issue, as you know, in most democracies, if not all, the quality of your inputs to parliamentarians and in public hearings is important, but even more important is the social and political weight you carry. In other words, we as MPs are like normal MPs. We can hear you, but if we see mass action, we're more likely to take you seriously. That's the way it is, right? I mean, that's the way it is. Politicians are politicians. Even those of us who come with struggle credentials are where we are, and we're playing the roles we are. Now, the thing that's striking is that this VAT has a huge consequence for the poor, the lower income earners. Where are the people outside petitioning? Where are the hundreds of people outside? Where is the mass action around us? You know, what I'm trying to say is I'm not seeking to incite anybody, but, you know, many of you come from a struggle history. There's a trade union federation that's got 1.9 million, if not 2 million, representatives. Its representatives will come here and present an eloquent argument. But these things are shaped not just by words. It's by action. If MPs see that at the eve of an election, where are the masses? Action over this issue. Also, you know what? Just like our credibility is at issue, so too are the people who come here from civil society. Who do you really represent, sometimes we ask? How many people do you represent, right? I'm saying this not to detract from the value of what you're saying. In this committee, we've always held the view, whether you're one individual or a representative of 2 million workers, whatever your skin color is irrelevant, as I said, you are their representative. If you don't speak for them, they will expel you. And so you're speaking for them, right? Now, whether it's one individual or a representative of 2 million workers, it doesn't mean, obviously we take the 2 million representative structures more seriously, but if one individual makes one useful point, even if he's speaking for himself or herself, Parliament has to apply mine to the medicine. People have actually come here, individuals, and they've made points, and we've incorporated it. But at the end of the day, what I'm trying to say is there are credibility issues, not just for public representatives, but also civil society. Now, on the Money Bills Act, we have recommended to the incoming parliament, and you know we cannot prescribe in an exit report, Mr. Leach, but maybe we should suggest within 18 months they settle these issues. But whether you'll find any way in the world, I've asked Zakele when he gets time, and Antonia, to begin to look, where you will get the proposals on tax 6 months ahead of implementing them, I can't see that happening. But on the other hand, Zakele, Antonia, let's look at whether there's scope. We would like a paper done before we exit, so that, you know, many of us are not coming back or not to the roles we are, and we don't want a situation where we just recommend to the incoming parliament, hey, do this. We want a paper, a framework for a paper. The deadline would be around end of March. How's it done? What proposals have we got to amend the MBA? Because I think we must agree that more can be done on the whole budget approach. And we've taken a decision that we got in our report, let me remind members, but less than I think civil society wants. Then the proposal from the Justice Coalition, stop it in October. You see, we're not here to delude you, right? And we're not playing you. I think Tandy covered it very well, right? The fact is that that's not going to happen. Am I right to say that? We can't do that. Practically, it's not possible. We're almost, empty BPS is more or less shaped now. So if you're expecting that, we want to tell you now. That's the one thing I think we can say. Is anybody objective by saying it's not feasible? As much as we agree with you, it's not feasible. It's not going to happen. Then the issue arises, Kosatu is saying, I'm not going to go through each submission, right, because we have to find out how you're going to respond with a limited time. But we're signaling these things to you because these are the problems we have. Now, what, excuse me, I would like to discuss with the committee separately that before we come back to the next sitting, maybe we have a small subcommittee that sits with the people here, the Cape Town-based representatives. We can link with phone by those of you outside Cape Town so you don't have to fly up to Cape Town. We have a small subcommittee, multi-party subcommittee, that engages more rigorously around your submissions because we're not going to be able to do justice now. If it can be done during the constituency period, Tandy will chair the subcommittee, obviously. I'm finished now. She'll be chairing most meetings on tax. I will be sitting next to her just to ensure that we don't finish at 9 o'clock at night because she's spoken for 4 hours at a time. But apart from that, I don't have much of a role until Tandy will chair a subcommittee. We'll come back to you with a proposal, Ms. Lee, tomorrow. You mull it over. We come with a subcommittee which meets ideally before we come back and take these issues forward. So, what I would like to suggest is that, firstly, a practical one, Tandy. There are people who come here, no other committee does this, so we're not obliged to, where we will have National Treasury reply on TLAB and TALAB, and you'll reply to them, and they will reply to you. We're not going to be able to do all of that, and we're spilling over into tomorrow. So those of you who came for the second session to be chaired by Tandy, which is meant for 12:15, how many of you are outside Cape Town? Oh, my God. Yeah, well, who held us up? Right. So the second session, meaning on TLAB and TALAB, well, we can connect with you, we'll ask people and so on by phone or something, but we are going ahead tomorrow. Those of you outside, if you have colleagues from PwC as an office down the road, right, you can, most of you, you've got the resources, you can come tomorrow. If you don't, you can monitor it in some way, we'll give you a recording and you can give us written reply. But remember, there is no obligation on Parliament to do this. And we're the only committee we know of that does it. And we are squeezed because the parliamentary powers that be, that includes Tandy, decide to change the program at the last minute. And secondly, we've got a limited parliamentary calendar for this period because elections are looming. So we do the best we can. So if need be, we'll have another sitting, if need be, when we come back. Having said that, now as for those of you, so on TLAB and TALAB, we're going to try to do what we can before 1:30. On the matter of you, what I would suggest, now here members, just see whether you agree. Ingrid, you should really, okay, here's what I'm proposing. Can members hear me out, right? Given the practical constraints, one, you can't reply to all the issues raised by the four members today of Parliament. So can you do it in writing within 7 days? B, you've put many questions to the professor here and her colleagues from the VAT panel. Can you, each of you, give us up to 10 precise questions you want them to answer? And they will reply in writing to the extent that the protocols of the executive, over which we have no control, provide for it. In other words, this is a report done for the executive, as I understand it. I'll check the rules out with Advocate Jenkins. And we cannot prescribe to them, but we can strongly recommend that this panel answers every question. And where they cannot, they must tell us in terms of which protocol, which regulation, they can't answer them. So between Treasury and the professor, again, 7 days within which each of you asked up to 10 questions. If you only have three, Lionel, don't ask 10. Now, the question also is, what is the value of you coming here if you can't finish the exchange? Yeah. And we knew the time. Now I'm utterly clear. Firstly, we don't have to have you here because you've already made the submission. Right? We're not sort of like saying we're doing you a great favor. No, we're doing ourselves a favor. We have to engage with the public. This Parliament's credibility is substantially lower than it was in the first 10 years. But you see the value of you coming here. Let's take Mervyn. Not because I'm being tribal, just an example. There are journalists here who cover what you say. You have to be activists. Release your statements to the media. Summarize it in half a page. Gay's not going to be able to. Gay gets 13 seconds on radio, right? She's not going to be able to. Lobby her. So the value of having you here now is that at least those people who are maybe watching this being cast on Channel 408 sometime, Alan? I don't think they cast this room. Eh? No, unfortunately not. We try to choose rooms strategically. But okay. But you know, the journalists are here. You have submitted to Parliament. You can answer to your constituency that you did your job. So the value is there already in just coming here. Right? And release it to the media. Release it to all the agencies. You know, the syndicated. So I don't think you should feel you haven't got a good enough deal yet. So that's my proposal. 7 days within which to put your questions to the panel. Treasury, them and us will discuss that. Two is that you reply to the questions here within 7 days. Three, those of you who can come tomorrow, from those of you who made submissions now, from COSATU downwards, right? How many of you can't come tomorrow? Right. Those of you who can't come tomorrow. Right. Let's start with, it doesn't matter, each of you gets 3 minutes to reply. Right. Can you go for it? Right. Sorry? We will see what we can do. Yeah. No, you have to be here. You're the co-chair. Tandy, don't give me a hard time. 3 minutes, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You spoke for about 19 minutes.
Did I? Oh. Oh, all right. Remember. Thank you very much, Chair. I'll be brief. The first question was regarding why not look at Malam Hodu or things like your intestines and your chicken feet and hearts and so on. I think the answer is simple and twofold. The first one is that we would really like that those households have access and choices in terms of the chicken protein that they can consume. The second aspect is that the what you speak of is actually sold in the informal market. So it's very difficult for us to also be able to quantify what is the value of that. And it's something that we battle with as well in terms of looking at that as a possible zero rating. But I think it's important for us to give access to an array of protein sources for the low-income groups. And certainly, the portions as indicated are consumed by those lower income groups. In terms of brining is kept at 15%. This is something, and I think what we need to talk to is at the core of brining is preservation and also flavor enhancement as well. So this is kept at 15%. It's regulated. It is an agreed
percentage, and I think there we work very well with the department in terms of regulating that with the industry. The next one was, is this not a clawback from AGOA? It certainly isn't. And I think what is important for us, and I hope that it has also been demonstrated with the undertaking that the industry has made, that the industry has heart. And the industry really looked at that basket. It looked at who is consuming the chicken, and it also looked at what it is that those lower income households are paying for. To come back to your question, because I suspect it's going to be the next one to say, is there no value to the industry? Of course there is. There is a value to the industry in the sense that...
2.5 minutes, can you round up in 3 minutes?
Okay. In the sense that there will be increased consumption. However, that consumption goes into further investment and it also goes into creating of jobs. Thank you.
Next 3 minutes, please, everybody. Who's next? Nobody. All right. In that case, you're going to have more time. Simon?
It affects the poor disproportionately. And we need to look at other mechanisms. And we've proposed other mechanisms. Our view is that the consumer is the weakest and it's easy to tackle. But we need to add, there are a couple of submissions that have been made in terms of progressive taxes that we can look at, and I would like to request that this, maybe we look at it from a higher level, because we have NHI coming, which we support and we believe will benefit all South Africans, and VAT must be on consumers must be the last thing that we look at. Thank you.
3 minutes, thank you.
So, four brief issues, Chair. I think on the question of school uniforms, we really appeal to Treasury, to Parliament, to all the role players to be creative in their solutions, not find obstacles, find solutions.
Yeah.
So something like school uniforms, you know, we should be moving towards a national school uniform, for example. In the interim, we can provide that a school uniform under a certain amount, is under a certain value, which is certified by the schools, and is stocked in shops, or official uniforms are exempted. So let's not find obstacles all the time. Let's find creative solutions. On the issue that was raised on more on industrial policy, we'll revert. We'll come back on that particular issue. On Mr. Lees about the presentations, accept the increase in VAT. If you look at the Budget Justice Coalition submission on page 2, as the Chair said, we call, in fact, for this increase to be reversed. And if that is not possible, then for that to be done in next year's budget. So civil society is very, very clear on that issue. For us, the feasibility is not the issue. The issue is ways must be found to deal with this. And then on the child support grant, I think Paula and others will deal with this tomorrow. But just, again, if you look at the submission on page 11, it doesn't say phase it in 3 years. It says increase it by this amount. In the alternative, if that's not possible, phase it in over 3 years. And it shows how it could be phased in over 3 years. If you look at page 11 of the Budget Justice Coalition submission. And then finally... Oh, yes, the final point was in relation to the increase in October. I've dealt with that. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Actually, who's next? I think we can finish here the 3 minutes. Paula, do you want to do your 3 minutes? Mervyn, 3 minutes. Go for it, Mervyn, then Paula.
Just one response, Mr. Chair,
yeah.
To Comrade Tandy was asking why are we suggesting the child support grant to be increased to between 330 and 669? It is because our forecasting, and we actually have a very good system which we could in which we can calculate the kilojoules used by children, and that would be what a basket of food that would meet the nutritional needs be. So it's food only, not anything else. That's how we've come to that. And then also to reaffirm what Neil has just said, we are not in favor of the, that increase. We would prefer it to be removed if we can.
Where you are? Yes.
Greg Smith, PwC. Just around the definitional issues and the compliance concerns. I don't think that our comments should be misconstrued. I mean, we weren't saying don't do it because of the concerns. What we were just trying to raise was there is a potential for abuse, and if this course of action is taken, for example, with regards to the school uniforms, if that is adopted, then we must be sure that there is no room for abuse. We don't want, I mean, if you look what I'm wearing great navy pants, and, you know, you don't want me to get a benefit of zero rating. I don't, you know, it should go to the school. So I think as long as we are clear on what the definitional issues are and they are resolved properly, then we would be in favor of it. Just around the zero rating as well versus state spending, I think Mr. Lee's raised that around removing zero rating completely, that costs the fiscus estimates are 26, 28 billion rand, and instead taking that money and actively spending it on the poor through targeted programs that are properly constructed. Obviously, you know, it's not a quick fix thing. It's something that needs to be designed over a period and make sure that we get proper bang for your buck. But at the moment, if we assume that the zero rating is well targeted and that it goes to two-thirds of it, for example, goes to the poor, even if that is the case, if two-thirds of the benefits of the zero rating goes to the poor, you've still got one-third, which is up to 10 billion going to the wealthy. Is that correct? If we took 28 billion and spent that on the poor directly, you know, the argument is that there'd be a lot more benefit for the poor. And just around the fruit and vegetables things, again, we weren't saying that the poor don't consume fruit and vegetables. They do. The issue is that the benefit of certain fruits and vegetables in the VAT chain and the purchase of those fruits and vegetables invariably accrues to wealthy households and not to poor households. And ways should be found of addressing that.
Thank you. Line-up. Chair, I will be quick but slow enough. For the Fair Play movement, it is all about local jobs and produce versus import. Currently, we have dry beans on the list. 40,000 tons of dry beans are produced locally. 60,000 tons are imported. 1 billion rand of poultures are imported, and those products are both on the list. For us, you said we are here, we need more relevance. We're saying review the current list. When you review the current list and you bring it in line with the current needs and the current consumer patterns, you would see that they are adequate or there is a case to take some of them off and to include others. And we propose that we include chicken. And we also think, Mr. Lee, that the 15% discount that someone will get on chicken would allow him to buy an additional 20 grams of additional chicken that would help him along the way. And that is where we are. We are not in the. We have deliberately not made a definition in our presentation. That's not our business. We want locally produced products, and we want to protect and create local jobs. We're doing very well with the replies for now, pending the written replies. Matthew? Can do.
I'll be very quick, Chair, because Honourable Whip is intimidating everybody. Chair, I think we would accept your proposal having a subcommittee. We would support it wholeheartedly.
That proposal? Can I make this clear? It is an idea that I will take to the committee. Whether we can actually do that or not, we will write to you.
If you do it, Chair, we would be available 24/7. We're having our Congress next week. We expect to see the Politburo, the party there, to help us come with a mass action campaign. You'll be leading the march to Parliament. I think, Chair, just for Honourable Lees, I think if you were to increase the VAT rate, you would have a devastating impact upon the economy, the poor. Yes, we've got 17 million social grant recipients, but your postal workers, your mine workers, your bus drivers don't receive social grants. So you're going to be squeezing those who are already squeezed too much. We think there is space to play on the luxury VAT rate, etc. Chair, just I think lastly to Honourable Tandy. Look, we deliberately didn't come with slogans to proposals. We came with, we're mindful of what you said, that if you remove here, you must complement here because of the fiscal crisis. So we came with a proposal that, yes, would avoid draining the fiscus, would target the poor, boost local industry, support sustainable development. That's why we said, Chair, we think that, yes, support poultry. Even on the sanitary pads, the school supplies, we think a very good approach can be simply for government to purchase those products and distribute them at your no-fee schools, your government clinics, to avoid the rich receiving it, etc., in addition to looking at the VAT exempt issues. Chair, on the water and electricity, what attracted us there is that that touches everybody. One, it's within government's control. Municipalities, ESCOM set the tariffs, or NASA, and you can have it in a progressive sliding scale to say, okay, the poor households, based upon property value, income status, social grant status, you can receive essential amounts VAT-free. The next amounts can be no more VAT-rated. And then for those who are wealthy, based on property value, income levels, can pay a higher luxury VAT rate, so you can have a cross-subsidy approach, so you don't bankrupt the state. But, Chair, you will be providing the essential goods for people to live, and everybody needs water, electricity, etc., Chair. I think, lastly, Chair, on the school uniforms, again, yeah, have a set national thing, locally produced. We think if we're creative, we can find solutions, Chair. Thanks very much.
Honourable Tandy said that the question facing this committee is how to increase revenue. And the Budget Justice Coalition would really appreciate an opportunity to discuss this question. We don't want to sit here and have to choose between chicken or grants or peanut butter or white bread. We don't think any of us should be sitting here having that conversation. We would prefer to have the conversation about how more revenue can be raised. And we've made the suggestion in both our previous submissions. We've costed those suggestions. We haven't seen Treasury come back to this committee presenting why it chose VAT, why it didn't increase company income tax, why it didn't increase personal income tax. There hasn't been a debate on this topic. This committee has said it's too difficult to reject the VAT increase and to increase the other taxes. We're not quite sure why it's too difficult for the committee to do that. So here we have to sit and discuss chicken or peanut butter. So I think we'd really like to ask for a forum where broader fiscal policy and tax policy can be discussed by the public prior to those decisions being made, so that we don't have to sit in forums like this and make choices between basic needs for people.
You see, we must be clear about the terms of the reference for any subcommittee.
Sir, I'm sorry. Yeah. Can we get examples of countries that discuss tax policies before they are...
Yeah, they can do it to us. We don't want to. Let me just put this to you. You're free to say what you want to say, but we don't want to delude you, okay? Then don't you then argue, yeah, we strung you along, and then, you know, we always knew we were going to do it. So let me make something categorically clear. And I must be very clear. Can the members who disagree with me say so? Okay, so this is not a proposal. It's what I imagine the majority feel. We feel, one, as we've said, that your proposal, as much as we may like it philosophically, is not going to happen, that we're going to stop the VAT going ahead through the MTBS process. Anybody disagree with us? Right. You have a policy, but we're saying it can't be done, the majority of us. It can't be done. So no use you participating and getting frustrated, Paula. Right? I would like you, at some stage, with your respect, to join the movement for socialism in this country, that workers and their allies take over the state, and those things will happen in that context. Short of that, some of the things you propose, I don't think are feasible, but you may be right. Maybe it's a Gramscian approach or something, where it's possible this side of, you know, taking working class control of the state. It's possible. I don't know. I don't know where it's happened anywhere else in the world. We can engage offline. So let me also put something else to you. It's not correct that there hasn't been a discussion about, maybe you were not party to them, about why don't you raise revenue through other sources? That's the very first question this committee asked on day one, before we had public hearings, when we got briefed on the bill. we engage with the fiscal framework through the appropriations committee's work and so on. So that's not accurate. That civil society should have a bigger role, we agree. I've already covered that ground. Thirdly, there is no proposal, Matthew, before this committee. It's an idea. We will come back tomorrow morning, have a small closed meeting of the committee to decide. Because our concern, Matthew, is that people will come to the subcommittee and will be raising like what you call fundamentals. We're opposed to the VAT in principle. And others are going to argue, yeah, who wants this VAT? The ANC study group itself said, Tandy said, hey, 1 year at most, right? And the ANC itself, as a political structure, has to have some say on the matter. Like, Mr. Lee doesn't come here and speak for himself. He gets his position from the parliamentary caucus. And wherever else, his parliamentary caucus, I mean. So we don't act outside. There are various other processes at work. Paula, it's not going to happen. If you participate, I think maybe, Tandy, we should say clearly, we are going to go ahead with this VAT increase for this financial year. We can't undo it for practical reasons, too. And Momo, whatever else you think of him, and the rest of it, he's explained it's impossible to go back and work out who bought what and so on. There are other ways of dealing with it. So, there are many issues you raise that fall outside, Paula and those of you who share the view, outside the purview of this committee. We have no authority to do the things that you're saying. As much as we said, most of us, in terms of values, principles, ideas, we agree with you. It's what's practicable. Not that you shouldn't say those things. If I were in your position, I would. If you were in my position, playing this role, you would be saying more or less what I'm saying, and I'll be saying more or less what you're saying. But we want to be very clear, Tandy. We cannot mislead people. We should have clear terms of reference should we choose that route. There is no obligation on Parliament to do more than we've done. But at the same time, we have a parliamentary program. There's the MTBPS cycle looming. We have to finish this thing. Otherwise, you can't do your budget for 2019. So having said that, I just want to see some clarity. Maybe you want to reflect on this, Matthew. Or maybe there's an answer. Am I correct? You're saying, obviously you don't want the VAT. But Kosatu seems to be saying you recognize for practical reasons it's going to go ahead. So what you want to negotiate are around additional zero-related things, items, especially those that benefit the poor, and B, a time thing. Well, if that's the case, Tandy, am I right? For now, can I stress it? For now, Paula? For now, our position as a majority, I think, I can't speak, the D is opposed to it in principle, I think, our position is, for now, we're edging towards saying that it must go ahead. Not edging, we feel it has to go ahead. Is that correct? Instead of not wasting your time. This is not the first public hearing, it's the fourth. Okay? So we can say it now. Am I right? Right. Two is that we will consider a time frame for it after further consultation and reflection on your submissions and what Treasury has to say. Is that a summary?
Yes.
Thirdly, we will look into, explore the possibility and come back to you within the next few days, Monday at the latest, about whether there's some value in having a subcommittee and what in terms of reference will be. Should we have such a subcommittee, the key person coordinating from the side of the committee will be Tandy. But we have to bear in mind that the constituency period opens up from Friday morning until, am I correct, the 8th. And members are in their constituencies, we are, and the elections are coming up, and like every parliament in the world, you have to campaign. So whether we can do that during the constituency period, given that we're scattered, I don't know. Whether we can even do it when we get back will depend on the number of hours parliament allocates us for the final quarter of the parliamentary calendar. Having said that, I thank you all for being here for the first item on the agenda. Now we're heading over to TLAB and TALAB. So there's no need for any of you who've spoken on the VAT side to come back tomorrow, unless you have interest in the TALAB. Over to you, Yanga.